There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by James Dowse.
Hey, I'm first, Josh.
And Josh Brown.
Hello, James Dowse.
Second
Brown. James Dowse only today.
Sorry, mate.
It's not too bad. We will very quickly touch on The Last of Us, because me and Josh did a little reaction video on it, and I was a little bit mixed slash I don't care, it's the cutscenes in live action. Josh is loving it, thinks it looks incredible, but I want to know what James Dowse thinks.
I'm on your side, Josh.
Yes.
I really like the look of it. As I was saying to you beforehand, Scott, I was more interested by this than the £70 remake.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, because, there's a lot more new
this is
stuff.
Free, isn't it, I guess. But, yeah, no, it visually looks incredible. Mm-hmm. Seeing those two together. But him, you know, when he put his finger to his lips and did the that was... He was Joel in that moment.
I could believe
that he is Joel.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. I think that scene as well, with the clicker in the middle, I'm hoping that's Neil Druckmann. I'm just hoping that's someone...
As the clicker?
Yeah. Right. I want it to be someone who's a creative mind, just getting to be a clicker and sort of slap against a window for a bit.
The Walking Dead did that a few times, where they would just get, like, you know, cameo zombies. People.
Yeah, Scott Ian's in there.
I don't know.
Who you'll know from Anthrax.
All those words did not make sense.
The San Francisco thrash metal scene.
Alongside
Megadeth, Slayer, and Metallica?
Who? Wow.
Yes!
But yes, the point stands that they got celebrities in, if that person you just said is indeed a celebrity, and those bands that you mentioned do indeed exist. Yeah.
You got the time, mate?
That'll be an example. Oh,
Madhouse.
What? None of this makes sense.
Anthrax.
I hope someone listening to this understands all
I'm
these
telling
references.
You, there's metal fans out there who are just thinking, finally, Anthrax is getting the reception, the exposure that they deserve.
Oh, yeah, because that's what we want to bring back, Anthrax.
They never went away. Are you talking as if they've not had new albums in the last few years?
Doesn't sound very healthy. Doctors wouldn't agree.
No, you're not wrong. Doctors hate number seven, James.
How many of our audience are... who you just said then.
What? Anthraxians. Yeah. I don't know.
You two people out there, you carry on, Josh.
If Joey Belladonna himself is listening in the podcast audience, then massive shout outs to him and Mr. John Bush. But anyway, this is the most anyone's talked about Anthrax in 2022 or in quite some time. Now, I wanted to, initially open on The Last of Us, but I thought we'd pivot into E3 stuff because I thought we'd do a bit of a news podcast. And one of the opening stories is the return of E3 in 2023. And I just want to know where the hell we come down on this. I also want to spin this out into a conversation on how early do developers or should developers show their games, because we had all the stuff around GTA 6 leaking and people seeing early versions of that game, and the conversation around that of just, oh my god, it looks terrible, oh my god, it doesn't look like it's complete. Obviously, from our point of view, I think a lot of people just went, yes, obviously there's a lot more ground to cover, and that build itself was from a good few years ago. However, I just want to have that conversation about, you know, when do we want to know about something. James Dell's thoughts.
I feel like, does it matter if E3 is not here anymore? Because we've got the
I had that written down. I was like,
and they all happen. Well, I guess the state of play didn't happen in June this year, did it not?
It did not.
No, so it was only Xbox that was in June this year, wasn't it?
Only Xbox.
Yeah. And a very empty summer.
So
we did have Summer Games Fest.
So if E3 comes back, is that saying that Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft all at the same time again?
Well, when E3 was supposed to be going ahead, I think it was this year or last year, this year actually, Sony kind of already got out and said that they weren't going to be attending anyway. No. So that's the kind of the big question mark for me. Just because it's coming back doesn't mean it's going to be as strong as it used to be.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a situation where there's only Microsoft there out of the big three publishers because the other two just want to do their own thing?
I don't see them coming back. I think that Sony and Nintendo have laid down the template with a Nintendo Direct. That's very much what the state of play is. Yeah. I feel like PlayStation have kind of started differentiating it a little bit. I mean, there was one point, I forget which year it was, maybe it was a couple of years ago, where people were just literally comparing the transitions between trailers and the voiceover and the way that it looks in terms of the state of play, and just saying this is literally a direct, like you are literally doing what Nintendo do. And I feel like that's still quite similar for what the recent state of plays are. But I think they've proven that they can do, you know, a God of War trailer or whatever, and everyone talks about it. They don't need to fork out the six-figure sum just to have a stage at E3.
They do a blog post.
Yeah. Hey, man, why shell
all
out
those PSVR 2 fans
figures
can't get enough?
Well, you just do an interview with Wired again to announce the PlayStation 6.
Oh, my
6.
God.
Just, listen, right, Sony do not need E3. At all. They can do their own thing. They can do their own big showcases. They can do their state of players. However, I need Sony to need E3 because I have missed E3 so much this year, my friends. The Summer Game Fest was good. Some of the other reveals that we've had have been very exciting. The last Sony State of Play was very good. Mm. But I have been starved for showcases in this year. I need to have that kind of thing to bank and to look forward to as a fan of video games, speaking as someone who literally just consumes them and does not make them. He just wants to get excited for a big video game Christmas that we no longer have. And, you know, E3 will come back and it won't be as good as it used to be. But I just kind of want there to be something else in the summer alongside Summer Games Fest that we have to look forward to and to write content around and to talk about, man. Because
watch it live.
It's been so sporadic this year with when things have been dropped and when reveals have happened. And that, to me, just isn't as good as it once was.
I think as well, like, as much as Jeff Keighley has a very like pristine approach to rolling out trailers, and it's, you know, it's like it's that whole thing where year to year we always compare, which is a nice rhyme, the way that he rolls things out in comparison to the sponsored segments that he has, or he has a guy dressed up as a giant Gillette blade walking around, or whatever the hell the thing is. I kind of miss the theater of E3. I miss the big reveals. I miss the lights going off and then something happening on stage, or when Sean Layden came out and his shadow was Crash Bandicoot.
Yes.
And then it was actually for the Skylanders DLC. It wasn't for Crash. But we got there. Like, the idea of everyone reacting at once, you have a live audience and playing into it a little bit. And there's obviously a lot of E3 cringe. There are tons of E3 cringe videos out there. But I think, like you said, we are missing something not having E3. But the thing is, I don't know if E3 / I think it's the ESA or the ASA who own them, get that. Because I think it's back in 2018 or 2019, they had all these plans for revamping E3. And it was all about making sure you had the companion app and you had all these Q-tainment they were talking about, so they could feed you stuff when you were in the trailer, when you were in the queue. And it's not that. It's not this like hyper, you know, almost tech show thing. It should be nerdy and quirky and campy and gamey. Like, that's kind of what E3, its greatest strength always was. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you get back to that, but that's what it needs, I think.
I think all the publishers, whether it's their showcases at E3 or whether it's their own, need to get that level of theatricality back. It might not be fine. It might not make any financial sense to go as outlandish as they used to in the modern age. But the things you mentioned there, Scott, you know, Sean Layden coming out with the Crash Bandicoot shadow. You know, I remember when they did that. Sony did their E3 conference in the kind of town hall from The Last of Us Part 2 with the lights.
And Gustavo Santaolalla's playing the theme.
Yeah, you had like the live music. You had like the fake zombies hanging from the ceiling when Days Gone was announced. And like, they were nailing it for like 3 or 4 years, just year after year, of complementing great announcements with a great sense of spectacle and a great sense of theater. And while obviously, you know, that doesn't contribute to the quality of the games, it's just fun to talk about. It felt like appointment viewing, like you said. You know, we were all rallying around the same night, you know, looking forward to it. Like I said, being able to do content about it and, you know, predictions and get excited for it that way. And I get the argument that that might lead to inflated expectations and whatnot. But I think there's a way for expectations to remain in check while still, you know, having this celebratory, potentially masturbatory marketing session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is weird is growing up and watching it, I adored watching them, but I always noticed that it caused a console war every single time.
Yeah.
Every year, it was just Xbox One, whoever won. Mm-hmm. But
oh, there's always who won
either. Yeah, and that always just pained me. But like being an Xbox One fan from 2013 to 16 or whatever, mm-hmm. those E3s were brutal. Like, they, like, it just drained the fun of E3 out of me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Any of these companies at this level should only be signing up if they have things to show. Yeah. Like, I think we're always hyper aware of, because it's that thing, you're sort of expecting the next trailer, you're expecting the next announcement, and if it doesn't come, and it doesn't come, and then immediately you start to fade out of it. The thing is, though, like, you know, you were mentioning, or we were mentioning the theater of it and announcements and everything. The God of War announcement, when Kratos walked out the shadow and you got to hear Chris Judge again, I think those things, that's like a life memory. Like, loads of my reveals, memories of games came from E3 or came from those showcases. They've never come from a state of play. I couldn't tell you a single Nintendo Direct reveal that stuck with me. Whereas I can remember Shigeru Miyamoto diving onto stage with a shield and a sword to pretend he was Link for a bit, which stuck with us for a while. So like, I think there's probably a happy medium to find. However, speaking specifically for Sony, you know, we mentioned Layden and everything, whether it's the Jack Tretton era or whatever, Jim Ryan's era, if we're talking like figureheads or who they would send out onto the stage, the Jim Ryan era of PlayStation is so cold. And it's so, like, it has a face kind of, but it's so businesslike. Whereas if you compare it to, when Shuhei Yoshida and Adam Boyes were doing this is how you trade games on PlayStation, and they just handed it to each other. It's quite playful. They had faces to it. There was the whole Kevin Butler era at the start of the 2010s. I just feel like they had a lot more to it. It bled over. You had personalities that bled over to the stage. The nearest thing to that now is what Phil Spencer's doing. Everyone loves Phil Spencer.
Yeah.
You know, we sort of don't even talk about the business reality of him and how many sort of, he's gone back and forward on a lot of exclusivity stuff in regards to what's happening with Bethesda, but I feel like there's a lot of ground to be gained in making sure that your companies have faces.
Well, it's the same with Nintendo losing Reggie.
Yeah.
Like, he was Nintendo.
They've got Doug Bowser, and they don't use him.
What was the last thing you saw him do?
Well, Doug Bowser?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Exactly. Like, just bring back Reggie. but that is who you need. You need a personality as the head of this the companies. But as you say, Nintendo, who do they have? Sony, do they have a show Jim Ryan that much?
Well, no, not really.
Yeah, but why would you want it when you've got a PlayStation blog or
you've got
an interview with Wired.com?
No, that was silly of me to think
that's the Mark Cerny approach, and we all love a good blog.
One of my favorite ever showcases was when Mark Cerny was on stage for 40 minutes talking about, I think it was the PS.
Oh my God, the tech specs of it.
Pro.
Yeah.
And we just had a lecture that everyone thought was going to be like an E3 style presentation, and it was the opposite of that. And
was that not the PS5 one?
When they said more,
they said like it's the first ever details showing on this date, and it was like it didn't have a big like announced thing, but it was Sony saying the details on the next console is this time, and we all tuned in. It was like 37,000 people in the first 5 minutes, and it was just Mark Cerny going like, "Well, this chipset does this. And we soldered this bit to this bit."
Well, can you remember the reveal of the PS5 and the Series X where it was just an advert that just went onto YouTube one day? Like, there are no big console reveals anymore, are they?
Not necessarily. I guess I remember the Series X reveal because it was part of the Video Game Awards, and it was so random
back. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And then like PS5 had its own little separate showcase thing, but still, there are ways to do it, especially with a live crowd. Yeah,
everything is just content, man. That's why everything just drops out of nowhere. The Netflix model of Sony announces the night before a state of play that a state of play is happening. It's going to be 20 minutes, and you know everything that's going to be involved because they say we're focusing on Japanese developers, or we're focusing on PSVR2, or we're focusing on third parties, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like, it feels like we're in this era of almost micro content where we get the blog posts, we get the trailer that goes up, but we don't get anything really dedicated or personal that has that personal touch.
How much do you think that's them sort of saying like, we don't need to do this stuff? Like, there's always the brazen reality of public showcases being for the shareholders and being for the investors more than they are for the fans. Like, yes, it can provide an update on how something's doing, but they're more for investors and, like I said, and shareholders and the financial side of it.
Here's an opinion. I don't mind the blog posts. I actually quite enjoy them.
I enjoy reading
them because I'm reading it myself. It's not the thumbnail isn't a spoiler of the actual.
Right, okay.
I read it at my own pace. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I mean by that, but I just, I don't prefer them, I like them.
I will say that when the PlayStation VR 2 was announced via blog post at the start of the year, one of the most exciting things that's happened this year to me, and that had no like actual footage of the machine or what was coming out on it.
Right.
It was just them saying, it's happening, boys.
Got one. There's like, words in it which like got you. And you're like, whoa.
Is it the 1830s when you just got words? I don't know, it's visuals, mate. I wanna know what's going on. But I think
Scott and I had a conversation this morning about books versus like television and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we kind of nailed it down to Scott likes things visualized, and that's why
That's
not how, it's not like I came into work and just went books versus movies, guys. what were we thinking? It was in regards to The Last of Us. And talking about the value of different adaptations. And for me, I was saying, if you're taking something that started as text, like when Game of Thrones went from book to TV, there's more interest there. There's more default interest there because you have to literally visualize something that was formerly, dependent on the medium, only in text form. And so that was my whole thing with The Last of Us. You're going from cutscenes that are immaculately shot and acted to a live action version that is immaculately shot and acted. And that's just not as interesting as for me.
But in your head, like you say, they're reading the book, you're making up in your head what it looks like. With these blog posts, you're just like, ooh. In your head, if you've got a good imagination, that can be whatever you want it
they'll
to be.
They'll never match that, though. They're never, ever going to nail that.
What I'm getting from this, James Dow, is that you want video games to be books, I think.
Yes, yeah. Do you know that was it the Oregon Trail or whatever that game was called from like the 90s?
Yeah,
like
a text. Your favorite game.
Sure.
The graphics on that are incredible in your mind.
I can imagine, yeah.
Have you played Disco Elysium? I think you might like it.
James Dowser's version of the PSVR 2 is incredible. It works really well.
It's just words.
It's just no just bugs.
The words, just the
just a big Kindle.
Yeah, just whatever you need. Yeah. But yeah,
that's the best games console, by the way.
Which one? The Kindle?
Yeah, Kindle. Paperwhite.
You can play Stranger Things on it?
You can do whatever you want, mate.
Get books and all that stuff.
I'll say this, the light of a Kindle, whatever shade of light that is, gives me a headache. Therefore, it is bad.
But they're good for reading in the sun.
And well, the sun is a... What? Explain this to me.
You go outside?
Like, yeah, I go outside sometimes.
Have you ever tried reading, I was going to say a book, it would help with the sun, wouldn't it? A phone, let's just say, your phone. If you go outside, it's harder to read, isn't it?
Yeah, but not a regular book because the light just bounces off the page.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But in a world where books are going out the window...
It's because you're throwing them out the window.
Kindles, you know, you can... I don't know why I'm set. I don't have a Kindle. I'm on Amazon's
marketing team. Kindle culture coming your way.
Yeah, screw it. End this podcast. Let's talk about Kindles, man.
No, we will talk about E3 stuff. I think that we should talk about how early devs can actually show stuff. Because I forget if it was at a Nintendo Direct or an E3, but we got that Metroid Prime logo, Metroid Prime 4, which has had no forward momentum whatsoever in almost 5 years. It's been a while.
18, I think it was, or 17.
Right, so yeah, like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mentioned GTA 6 stuff earlier on. I think the solution to a lot of this stuff, and actually you would show off a lot of early builds at E3, providing there was actually something to show off at all. I remember when, there's two examples that I remember just being like, that's too early. One was Criterion. It was the game they were going to make after Burnout, and it was a game where you could either be in cars or planes or bikes, and they showed off like a CG version of it with like a wireframe mesh thing for the part they hadn't finished yet. And it was like, that's what we're aiming for, guys. And then absolutely nothing whatsoever. And then I think it was the original version of Mass Effect Andromeda, where it was way too early and it was just talking heads. It was just like members of the dev team. I think that's in the right direction, but I don't know where you guys come down on, like, you know, do you try and get a community on board with something from the earliest possible standpoint? Do you wait till there's a vertical slice? Like, and also, would you accept an E3 that was almost entirely vertical slice stuff?
I would. For me, the happy medium is, I mean, look, one of the biggest... L's that I've taken in my professional career covering video games is when Fallout 4 happened. Yes. It was announced 6 months before it released. And I remember being on a video saying that this is the future of video games and this is going to set a precedent that nobody is going to announce things 5 years in advance anymore.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get a quick turnaround because it's far more exciting. You have far more to show. Obviously, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And then Bethesda, in fact, did an entire 180 and announced The Elder Scrolls 6 well before any
with
work
a logo.
Had even begun in that game.
Yeah.
However, in general, I don't mind games being announced early as long as there's not a major gap between trailers or reveals. I don't like the Elder Scrolls 6 approach where we get a logo and you know it's not in production, so you know you're not going to get an update and then you literally don't get an update for years and years. However, I don't mind the Death Stranding approach because that game's production was dragged out you know, for so long. That was revealed before Hideo Kojima had even decided on an engine that he was going to use for that game.
Plus, we didn't even know what Death Stranding was until launch day, which is that's a risky thing to do. But the first video we did was, what exactly is this game?
100%. However, I loved it because he created a mystery around that game, and we got reliable new trailers for that game at every major conference. It wasn't like it was announced with that great trailer and then we didn't see it until 6 months before it came out. Mm-hmm. It was, there's the first trailer, he's the second trailer, you know, digest that, he's the third trailer, he's the fourth trailer, and it was new stuff every time. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind it if a game is teased over that long period, as long as we have new stuff to digest.
Yeah, I think if you get it, like, that's the thing, it's like giving us enough stuff to talk about, because for me, I hate CG trailers with a passion, and I'm like, that would be a way to slot something in at the beginning of development that lets people know what's coming up, but for me, it just gives us nothing. At least like a vertical slice or a mesh demo or whatever is something in a direction. A CG trailer for me can be entirely obtrusive or whatever, where it can be something that's not even close to what we're going for. I don't know. You guys come down on CG stuff, but I just
the one in my head is always Dead Island. The trailer for that was like the best trailer ever made, but personally, I didn't enjoy the game.
No, that trailer's always held up as like a massive deal.
But at the same time, Dead Island 2, that was announced, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
And only this year was the first time I've seen it?
I think so. Yeah. That took kind of the same as the first one. It took forever to sort of get turned around. Yeah. But yeah, in terms of E3 themselves, they have said that they'll be splitting the conference into two separate shows. So it'll be the business days, the press days. I think it's the same dates as before, June 13th or June 15th. And then it's the public days after that. So they're trying to hybridize, I guess, the way that something like Gamescom approaches it, which ironically is what Keighley has managed to lock down. Like, he does opening night live for Gamescom, which is a mix of opening night live as like his mini E3, and then you get the public stuff after that.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I think maybe that's the future of these shows. You have like a public backbone to it, but you get the streaming shows out the way first, you freak everybody out, and then maybe you reveal that this thing is playable or whatever, as long as you're at the show, and then you got to make sure you go there next year.
I hope it happens so we can go next year. You know,
we're going.
Selfishly, hope that it happens and people are there. So
Silent Hill, can't wait.
We can try to get there.
Max Payne 4,
No, ultimately, I do. I am excited for it to come back. I'm just aware that it's never going to be as packed as it once was with publisher support, because we have fractured the video game marketing side of the industry so much over the past 2 or 3 years. Especially, and it's all Nintendo's fault by starting those great Nintendo Directs.
Well, that was my final thing on E3 stuff. It's just like a brazen question. It's like, does E3 need to exist? Like, no.
No, but I want it to.
Same. And I want them to realize what they have.
Here's a weird question. Have they ever, in your head, ever sold it as something like you can imagine you going to?
Oh, yeah. I grew up idolizing E3. Like, right, I think that's changed over the... Well, it depends. I think that's changed over the last few years, specifically the last few years, because it just felt like not as many big scoops were happening at E3. However, the God of War thing, I think that was 2017's E3. That was a huge thing. And every time something like that happens, I'm like, oh my God, I'd love to imagine being in the crowd for that.
Yeah.
Or imagine being in the crowd for X new piece of tech or whatever it is. I always feel like E3 is like the mecca of all those announcement places. And I always wanted to go there. I grew up wishing to go to E3.
Right.
Well, you had to do that, yeah. But like Josh said, if I was looking forward to that now, it's not the same anymore.
Would you travel to another country to do that?
I think it depends who's going to be there. I think if it's too many months ahead where the likes of Sony are saying we're not going to be there, already that's a massive blow to the potential of what E3 could be. Whereas all those previous years, I forget what the first year was they pulled out, maybe 2016, something like that. There was so many years where everyone was there. And I remember even when Sony pulled out, Phil Spencer was the one saying that, you know, these events are important to the industry. That's why they'll always be there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's kind of in the run up to it. And if they can get everyone on board, it'll be a massive deal if they confirm Sony are back, because clearly Sony don't think they need to be there.
Echo some of what you said there, Scott, because I've never felt excitement quite like when England scores a goal in a World Cup or European tournament, right? When they score a goal, and you're in a pub with a bunch of other, you know, fans of the team, and you just feel euphoric, right? It's great. Mm-hmm. I want that feeling in video games. Right. I want to be in the room when something great is announced, and for it to feel like England have just scored in the European final or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that everyone freaks out, or sorry, the reason everyone gets so caught up in, oh my God, it could be X thing for every single event, whether it's a Nintendo Direct or an Xbox stream or whatever, comes from E3. It comes from the E3 surprises. And it's like, that's what E3 needs to deliver. If they had one good show where they actually get to pay the relevant parties and reveal remakes or re-releases or whatever of various like dream projects, immediately E3's back, because they already have that crown waiting for them. And it's just kind of been mildly given off to Keighley or Nintendo or whatever. Like, you know, they have a way to make things back.
What is funny is, can you remember a couple of weeks ago when it was the Nintendo Direct and we did the podcast just before it was about to happen, and then you missed it because it turns out it was, and then you come back into the room and said, oh, it's happening now, and you just went, ah, oh, fair enough. Like, there is no feeling of you're going to miss out, because you can just
catch up later. Which, like, I guess catch up stuff is good, but I think that, like, you try and capitalize on the live action, the live event side of it, and it's just like, you can't miss this. Like, we used to try watching E3 live. And me and Jules we streamed it one year. Whenever they did Fallout Battle Royale, I remember that at 3 a.m. thinking, why am I awake at 3 a.m. for Fallout Battle Royale? Anyway, next piece of news, and we'll get back to E3 stuff as more details come out about it. But the next thing I want to talk about is Netflix making their first internal game studio. And what do we think about, do we even trust Netflix to be able to target the right types of games? They've put a press announcement out saying that they want to make engaging original games. And Polygon's write-up also stated, reminded me that they do own the Oxenfree devs. And you can play various games already on the Netflix app, including the Stranger Things 3 game, Before Your Eyes, and this year's Immortality by Sam Barlow is also being added later this year. So they're kind of making like a nice little package of titles. I feel like it's like similar to, they're almost like the A24 of games kind of thing, if you can kind of chase it down that direction. Or Annapurna's titles have been very similar. Thoughts,
Are they
chats?
All mobile games? Are they only on the app?
Yes, so you need the Netflix app. I mean, some of these Stranger Things, Stranger Things 3, the game, was on iOS and Android anyway. Yeah. And then as far as I know, it's been delisted, but it is available on the Netflix app.
So do you know if, like, let's just say the Netflix app on a PlayStation, for example, are they going to want to put games in that?
You would kind of hope so, but I think that clashes with whatever other licensing deals they've got for the PlayStation Store and or Nintendo or Xbox or whatever, because they haven't done that yet. I think initially the idea was that Netflix games would be streamable, and that was, I remember that being a conversation a few years ago, but now it's just like they are separate executables inside the Netflix app away from the streaming stuff, because that's way more reliable than streaming something.
So if they're getting big budget games and they're going to be limited to a mobile.
Well, that's the thing. Assumedly, this new studio would be making big games or whatever. They haven't clarified much else other than just they want to strive for original stuff. But what do you think Netflix will go for? Like, because Amazon just tried to do a big old MMO thing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like the games that they've put on that service and are putting on that service outside of this internal studio that they've just formed, I think are like really good picks for what Netflix is. Like, yep. Immortality is kind of like the perfect game for that service. You know, Before Your Eyes is great. Oxenfree, I don't know much about that, to be fair, so that might be an anomaly, but the rest fit my hypothesis.
Still very,
like, saying.
Very cinematic or very dialogue-driven, very character-driven, yeah.
There we go. However, when it comes to these non-video game companies, these big non-video game companies getting into the video game space, I will never trust them or care. Because Google tried it with Google Stadia and then decided to shut down all of their first-party studios. Mm. We've got Amazon, who have been, you know, threatening to get in on the game for years now, and I don't trust them at all either.
Amazon have tried, but not very well.
No, not very well at all. And it's kind of like, even if someone like Disney can't even crack the video game sphere and eventually have to just resort to licensing their characters out to people who actually know how to make games, I do not have any faith that Netflix, which is making a bunch of terrible business decisions this year and hemorrhaging money. I do not trust them to, you know, make something good. But hey, I would like to be proved wrong.
I remember when Disney used to make games, when their logo used to be in front of stuff like The Lion King or whatever. And it's like, I don't think the thing is, if they got the scale of production right, where, for example, Netflix, like, you know, they have that whole, they are known for canning shows after like two seasons. It's a miracle if you get a season three. Which is very, obviously happened to Stranger Things, happened to Daredevil, but it's very few and far between. And so I wonder how much them coming across from all their like TV mandates and all their business deals and all their ways of operating and just trying to transplant that onto a game production cycle.
You know what it reminds me of? Mm. The exact inverse of when it was 2013 and the Xbox One had just been announced and Microsoft was saying, we want to make TV shows. And it was kind of like, but if I wanted to watch a TV show, I would go to literally anywhere else to watch a good TV show. It kind of reminds me of that, where they want to expand the brand beyond just movies and TV and try to get in a more multimedia crowd. But
like, why would you go to Netflix for a game?
Exactly. But why would you go to there for that specific thing? I think it's a classic case of companies trying to appeal to everyone and then potentially appealing to nobody at the
end. I feel like they'd be better off licensing the Netflix name and some of their budget or whatever to the likes of Supermassive, like the next whatever. I know they're doing a whole series of games going forward, I think with Tencent, but I feel like, you know, Netflix's name could get them a series of actors who maybe made their name in Netflix shows. But like, I just, like you said, you wouldn't go to Netflix as a game dev. Like, if you see their logo in front of something, it's very much an upward trajectory. I'm curious, though. I mean, I think something like Stranger Things is yet to be capitalized on. There's one very pixely Stranger Things game, which, you know, originated, obviously the show originated on Netflix and everything, but it's like, if there was a Squid Game, that's pretty much Fall Guys. Like, that stuff could have worked very well.
That's true.
Like, there's a way to do it.
Yes, they should just do branding deals more.
Potentially, yeah. Oh, you do a Netflix Fall Guys.
Well, speaking of Fortnite.
There he is.
love that.
Because the Stranger Things, whatever, he's not the Xenomorph. I can't remember what the Stranger Things creature is called.
Oh, the first one's called the thing with the
Demogorgon.
Yeah, with the bit that, with the eyes and
that
the
was
hands.
It. I'm
that.
Very certain that was in Fortnite and Fall Guys. I think I might be wrong about Fall Guys. Mm. But yeah, why don't they just license their stuff off more?
Yeah, and they build it that way. I guess I'm curious what sort of thing they aim for. Like Josh said, the titles that they've picked, Before Your Eyes is a very, very unique game where I think the passage of time is every time you blink and different things happen.
Which is going to be interesting. I don't know how that mechanic would translate over to, I suppose your phone has a camera, I guess it would work that way. That makes sense. Mm-hmm, that would be applicable, and it's a very, like you said, Scott, a story-driven, character-driven game, so it fits with, you know, the kind of content that Netflix likes to produce. I just kind of had a thought
because
James Dowse is talking about licensing out their properties, and you mentioned Squid Game.
Yes.
What if they did Squid Game, but it was made by the people who made Doritos Crash Course?
Whoa.
I think that's $1 million idea.
All you need to
right
now is mesh your fingers together. That's the perfect thing.
That'd be great, man.
To
it
do,
would be, man. Wouldn't it? I'm wasted here. That's what I'm saying.
That's what I was thinking about. The scale of production. I feel like they would have a nice inroad to, like, yeah, I'll try that. If they got the level of production right, if they didn't go overboard and start trying to make AAA stuff that can compete with Sony, I think that their inroad is indie style stuff like this, but with fun gameplay ideas that tie into whatever game is doing the rounds at the time. Because we don't really get tie in games with movies anymore of any particular quality. Whereas I feel like Netflix has, you know, a way of having a gaming division or a gaming developer that literally works alongside the team, like the TV team, the film team, and makes something to release alongside it.
This just kind of reminds me of the time when Netflix was going to go all in on interactive movies and storytelling, and we got, you know, Black Mirror, Bandersnatch. Amongst a handful of few other projects, Defrosting Mince, alongside a few other projects that kind of used the same gimmick, but it was one of those, you know, business moves that sounded cool on paper that they were going to invest so much in, and now it's kind of like a novelty that people only remember for very niche quotes to quote on podcasts.
That's a very, very good point. I feel like I forgot about Bandersnatch and that whole push into like, what if you could push an arrow on the screen to do stuff?
So it could turn into those old like Sky games, can be on Sky TV.
That's what I was thinking, man.
Beehive Bedlam, bring it back,
there
mate.
You are. Yeah, that's what it could turn into.
I'd love Beehive Bedlam. But
why would you want to innovate on perfection? Like Sky already nailed it 20 years ago.
Why is Sky not got a Sky like package thing, like a bundle where I can play? What's that one where you play as a little ship and you rotate around and you go underwater?
Oh, I don't know.
That one was really good. We did a list on games everyone played but no one remembers or no one talks about, and it was in there alongside
Beehive. Who made those games?
I don't know.
Did they have a game in Division Sky?
An angel? No, I don't think so. Just a.
Well, there you go.
I know. There's a whole wing of stuff they
could
bring back.
Get those people to work on Netflix's gaming division.
Yep. I would love that. And final news thing, to go into the final thing, is that the From Software job listing on their own Japanese website has mentioned that candidates will be in charge of a wide range of designs relating to characters and mecha. Mecha meaning, assumedly, that they are actually going to be doing an Armored Core game. Later in the post, it says that those who are good at mechanical design are also welcome. I just want to use this as a way to talk about what do we want from Software next, because their games, the Armored Core series, is like a very different to Dark Souls. I guess you can see the through line, but do you want a mech-focused game from Software after this?
Am I right in saying that the last Armored Core game, was that the one with the Kinect, where you had to do all that?
That was Steel Battalion.
Oh, well. Delete that.
Was it Armored Core 5, the last one?
I'm not an Armored Core fan, so right. I'm not sure. The first one was 97, I think?
Yes. Yeah. I think 5 was the last one I played, because this was a game series that, to me, sustained itself entirely by
2012 for Armored Core 5.
There we go. Yeah, it sustained itself entirely by being associated to my cousin, who I thought was the coolest dude around. So anything he played, I thought was excellent. Right. But then I went and played Armored Core on my own and realized it sucked and he had bad taste.
Right.
So now I am not interested in Armored Core at all, especially when we've seen From Software change and evolve so much, in the same way that I wouldn't want them to go back to like Kingsfield or whatever, you know?
Yeah, see, the thing is, I feel like the Kingsfield name gets talked about quite a lot just because everyone goes, oh my God, the Dark Souls formula. And then there's always someone saying, it's actually Demon Souls, and it's actually Kingsfield. And I'm like, I feel like that kind of has an inroad, whereas I don't really feel like anyone talks about Armored Core. Like, this maybe an inroad, might just be because it might be a Western thing.
Let me ask you guys this.
I clearly don't even know what it is.
I'm going to say that mechs are not cool, and I don't like playing any game where I have to be in a mech, even Titanfall.
I was going to say, Titanfall 2?
It's good.
How dare you?
It's the exception to the rule, I will only get in that mech through gritted teeth, my opinion on the entire subgenre. I didn't like Zone of the Enders that much because of this reason.
God. Has the game done mechs right in your head?
Well, Armored Core was alright. I'm not sure you can play that series.
The Kinect.
What was it about Armored Core
that? Can you show me a picture of it just so I actually can see what this game is?
I'll show you photos. And Josh Brown, what did you like about playing Armored Core?
I loved the customization options because obviously you could make your own mech, and that was the cool feature of it for me. Like you had so many different interchangeable parts that you could swap in, swap out. You could really tailor the mech's play style and its visual kind of characteristics. Mm-hmm. In that, I enjoyed customizing the mech more than I enjoyed actually being in it. So if they bring that part of it back, that would be really cool.
Because I feel like the trajectory that they're on, like obviously Elder Souls series and then Bloodborne and everything, and then Sekiro was like, what if we had a jump button? And Elden Ring, what if we had an open world? And I'm just like, you were going in such a specific trajectory that I wonder how that then comes back across into a mech series. Like, because then all of a sudden it would be way more lead, and it would be way more weighty, and it'd be more about like armaments and ordnance and everything. And I just don't know if like that's the thing you do. But at the same time, you know, anyone who's a From Software fan for long enough mentions Armored Core. Like, it occasionally does come up, even though I don't think it is in regular conversation. But I think as something to pivot into, you almost might as well.
It's kind of like incredibly niche as well, you know. I don't know how well it would sell. Obviously, the From Software name is going to give it a huge boost, but I don't know. With a team like theirs and with so many other franchises that they could dip back into, I think they're great at knowing when to kind of call time in a franchise. Like even Dark Souls, you had 3 games, and even then you kind of could tell that they were sick of the story, because Dark Souls 3 is kind of about, you know,
3 is like a victory lap of Souls 1 or whatever.
Totally. It's a victory lap, and it's about how things have to end, and you can't just be repeating the same ideas and bosses over and over again.
Very true. I think that's the thing. That I forget where the rumor was that someone was interviewing, I'm not sure if it was Hidetaka Miyazaki from FromSoft, and they said their next game is almost finished already anyway. So it's like, is that the Brandon Sanderson game? Like, there's something else. This assumption that they were going to start working with notable writers of the Fantasy Persuasion and do at least another Elden Ring and then maybe move on to the next thing. Maybe by that point, we'll be up for a blasty game.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, if they can keep like the turnaround going, because they make these games incredibly fast, man. Like,
oh, yeah.
Elden Ring took a little bit of time after Sekiro, but obviously it was huge. Mm. But if you look at the release from Dark Souls 1 to Bloodborne to Dark Souls 2 to Dark Souls 3 to Sekiro to, you know...
I'd say once every year? Ring. 2 years?
Every year, every 2 years? Yeah. It's incredibly rapid. So, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they drop an Armored Core and then the year after drop, you know, the successor to Elden Ring or something. Yeah. You know, you never know with them, is the thing.
Yeah.
What about DLCs and stuff for Elden Ring?
Ooh. We can but hope.
I really hope.
It doesn't make sense to not do it. Every Dark Souls game's had one. Everything's had one, right? Like except Sekiro.
Sekiro had one, but it was like, it wasn't a story-based DLC. It was like challenge-based things. But even then, it still had something.
Yes, it did have something. Yeah, I feel like it has to have
As somebody
something.
Who's only played Dark Souls 1 and Elden Ring, how do they do DLC? Like, how would you imagine with Elden Ring? Would a new island spawn and then you're on that island? Is that how it would go?
They do DLC incredibly well, James Dowse, right. And I would recommend all of them. Like, the Dark Souls 2 DLC in particular is so imaginative and expands upon the base game. Like, even if you didn't like the base game for Dark Souls 2, I think you probably would like the DLC for Dark Souls 2. It's that good, especially taken as a whole. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they usually kind of spin off either a continuation of the story in a new location with like new enemies and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like it is an expansion as much as it is a DLC. It's like its own kind of like game.
There'll be some way to like a portal. Like in Dark Souls 1, there was a painting that you went through. I forget how you trigger it in Dark Souls 2 and everything. But yeah, there's nearly always some other really expansive landmass where it's like, oh my God, you guys just made more of the game. Like it doesn't feel necessarily like a tacked on thing. It feels like a genuine expansion.
I did the DLC for 1, but that was a time when I was about to face the final DLC boss, that really, really hard one, which is in the depths. I can't remember what that
in
one was
in Elden
called.
Ring or in Dark Souls?
In Dark Souls 1.
Oh, Manus. Manus, yes.
Right. So what I did is I was just like, what I'll do is I'll just do a new game plus just to like build up my level, and I didn't realize that it just resets everything. I couldn't even go back to that area, so I just deleted the game.
Save yourself fair. Some of the pain.
The only boss I didn't do in Dark Souls 1 was that Manus.
I respect that.
Yeah. I think that's completely fair. Yeah. But yes, we'll keep an eye on all these things, and we'll see whatever comes from software next. I think my gut says it'll be Elden Ring. I feel like it'll either be the DLC, or they'll just capitalize on what an insane success they just had by partnering with George Martin, and by either doing something with him again, or I hope the Brandon Sanderson stuff is real, because that dude seems to be very popular with the fantasy folk. For now, though, this has been What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by James Dowse. And Josh Brown. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Blah, blah, blah.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.